Podcast People's Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 255 of What Most People Think, and this is the second successive episode where I am in a travelodge, this time in Leeds, because last night I finished the recording of the series Jeff Norcott's Working Men's Club, and I'll just bring in my guest there this week, returning to the show, Leo Kirst. Leo, can you believe it that Radio 4 have commissioned a comedy series called Working Men's Club? It's got knob gags, Leo. It's got bloke stuff. Is this the revolution that I've been trying to do as a sleeper cell from within? Is it finally happening?
I think it's the last gasp of a dying regime trying to cling on to relevance and trying to like get people to watch. They should have done this like 10, 15 years ago instead of commissioning like, oh, the Ponzi Oxbridge Genderqueer Guide to Hating Yourself. You know, they should have had some actual proper comedy.
Did they actually commission something called the Genderqueer Guide to Hating Yourself? I mean, I would have watched that just out of interest.
I think that's been the unofficial working title of every BBC comedy show since about 2005.
Well, see, now I'm in the position of being a BBC shill again. But, you know, Radio 4 comedy, that gets audience, mate. Like, I mean, we're talking, like, the news quiz gets about 3 million people. These are fucking insane numbers, you know? And you know, being the mercenary that I am, I went to the BBC audio talent party at Christmas. And it was one of the most well-attended parties I've been to because, as you know, Leo, no matter how left of centre a comedian might be, we're all fucking mercenaries and we're all climbing the greasy ladder.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, comedians, I used to do a bit about this in my show, like how comedians, they all act like they're left-wing, but they're all the most, like, Thatcherite, self-starting entrepreneurs going out and hustling for work in a completely free market. They'll all step over each other. Man, the most left-wing comedian out there would throw other comedians out of a helicopter like Pinochet.
I mean, this is great. We've been on 2 minutes. This is great having you back on the show, Leo. We've slammed Radio 4. We've slammed left-wing comedy. This is why you need to be on the show sometime, you know? We've got to do that stuff every once in a while. And are you enjoying the election? I mean, obviously, you're doing a lot on GB News. I think that the listeners would be interested to know, how does the Ofcom thing work at GB News? Because obviously, and I'm not sure people, A, are aware that GB News are Ofcom regulated, and B, what that means in election, which means you have to have a balance of views and coverage throughout the day. But what I want to know is how GB News get in their positive Green Party coverage. How do you do that?
Well, you've got to, I mean, the sort of basic rules are you can't be stupid about it. You can't go out and say, you should definitely vote for this person and stuff like that, because then, that's obvious bias. There's weird sort of like technical rules. So if you mention a constituency, then you've got to mention all the candidates in that constituency so that people know that there's a range of candidates. But, you know, there's been such an explosion of smaller parties that some constituencies have got like 10, 15, 20 people running in them. And it's always the host's job to read out the list of the candidates. So they're just, if anybody mentions the constituency, they hate the person who's done that, because they've got to pull out this sheet of A4 and then read out. And for some reason, politicians have all got, they're all called Montezuma, Penelope, Benedict and stuff. They've all got nuts names.
Is that where you lot are just basically kicking each other under the shins a lot during headlines? Fuck's sake, man. I mean, it's funny because we do think that the long list of independent candidates is a relatively new thing. But once upon a time, when the actual entry money for politics was a lot lower, there was a famous one from the 80s that I saw the clip of the other day. And one of them was like the Ford Cortina Hatchback Alliance.
Was that just some low-cost guerrilla marketing from Ford?
I guess these days that would be a great viral marketing campaign. But it got so parochial, to it was literally down to the point where the corner of Cromwell Street, anti-advertising hoardings above the shop, just by the chip shop. But now, obviously, you know, people are always conscious of getting their deposit back. So we're just left with really great quality of political candidates. I think we'll all agree.
couldn't be better.
This is what most people think. This is what I am, slightly right of centre, which is by no means a cool position to be in politics anymore. I've been outflanked by other comedians and other parties. I'm like the uncle now. And I had a bit of a communication from a guy called Sean, who said to me, given the likely Labour landslide, will I have to change the title of the podcast, right? Which is, I think Sean was sitting on that for ages. And he, if he just waited another 10 days, wait till the election's done, Sean, you know, there's your win. But he couldn't help himself. And of course, yeah, the what most people think, I don't think everything I think is exactly what everyone else thinks. But the point of the podcast is to try and give those real world reactions to politics, right? So if we talk about Gamblegate, you know, for example, by the way, Gamblegate does sound like a really pretty village in the Yorkshire Dales, doesn't it? But if we say that, you know, like, I think the press coverage of that is disgusting, despicable, and it is fucking awful, and we will get onto that. But I also think there's a lot of people that have just been having banter with it, like just taking the piss. Yeah, you know, it's so fucking embarrassing.
It was a real sort of bonehead moment for the Tory party, because, you know, Bonehead in Oasis, he was the one you looked at and you're like, man, I could be in Oasis. You know what I mean? Here's this like bald guy, obviously just, you know, failed his like plumbing apprenticeship and then somehow ended up in Oasis.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. I think if any of us were in the Tory party, you know, we're facing electoral wipeout. We're like, well, why don't we make 120 quid off this?
I think that the problem for the Tories is it's stupid and it's embarrassing, and the paucity of ambition. It wasn't like a coordinated and obviously well covered. One of them, the geezer literally walks into the fucking bookies. So he's probably even got like a rosette on while he does it. Yeah. He probably even said to the guy behind the counter, while I'm here, can I rely on your vote in the upcoming election? Okay, new patrons. As you know, as a regular Leo, we do take the piss out of their names. We've got some good names of these guys. If you join, you get the podcast early, ad-free, and with bonus content. And obviously, we're doing a lot of extra shows during election period, and I hope to carry that on afterwards. So basically, it's more of that content, but with no extra monthly charge. What a salesman, eh? That was fucking corny. I sounded like a guy that owned his own used Ford car garage there. We got Peter Blackburn. I was thinking, Peter Blackburn, if I was writing a book about business, that would be the name that I would give to a character that was involved in espionage, Peter Blackburn. I mean, also, it shows that once upon a time in his family's history, they just didn't have any imagination. You just go, what's your name? Peter. Where are you from? Blackburn. There you go, Peter Blackburn. We've got Catherine Morgan Rees, who sounds like the Tory candidate for Gamblegate, I would say. We've got Ian Ford. He's like, you know, when you did you ever have an early corporate job, Leo?
Yeah. I had quite late corporate jobs as well. Because I didn't start comedy till quite late. But yeah, I worked for like weapons manufacturers and stuff.
Ian Ford sounds like your first ever big boss, who eventually, as you get on in life, you realise wasn't that senior. But you're, oh my God, Ian Ford's in this week.
People can fool you in offices by wearing a nice suit and acting like a boss.
I always thought when I was a teacher, that was like, you know, what was my strategy to teaching? So people would all talk about, well, you know, how do you view Shakespeare? How does he deal with women? I was like, fuck all that. First things first, get a suit on and seem like a bastard.
Yeah.
It works. Teenagers, they always say, oh no, teenagers are sensitive. No, the teenagers are, you know, like the sand people in Star Wars. They're easily spooked, but they will return in greater numbers. So you just got to go in there and make some weird fucking dragon noise and then make sure that you don't piss about when they try you again. The main talking point. So last week, I don't know if you've been through this, Leo, is that I was having a very difficult personal problem, is that I'd gone off lager. It was a good 2 to 3 weeks where, for some reason, the taste of lager was appalling to me. And I put the word out to the community and I had more feedback than I've ever had for anything, right? The letterbox was full. I had so many emails. So I'm just going to name check a couple of them. Peter Jameson said, if you've gone off lager, he recommends an ice cold Asahi.
That's a lager.
Well, isn't beer and lager? So I once thought that there was a difference between beer and lager, but I think that they're mostly the same thing.
Well, beer, I think, can be like a bit darker and maybe less fizzy. And a bit less yellow.
Well, this guy, I mean, now we're going to have another full in bag next week about the difference between beer and lager. He said, but you've got to go for the 660ml bottle, not the full-on lady beer, as he calls the 330ml. And I did think full-on lady beer would be a good brand. You know, like eventually they always decide we haven't got enough female customers.
Yeah.
Like every brand decides this. They don't think, let's just make sure we keep the male ones we've got. They go, how can we make more women drink beer? Full-on lady beer. I claim that IP. So, yeah, thank you for all of that correspondence. I am, I should say, just an update. I went into a Wetherspoons, Leo, on Saturday, and I was quite worried, actually, because I did think, like, if I can't enjoy this beer now, it's like impotence, you know what I mean? The third time you go back there, you go, this might just be the last time I ever attempt this. And I just got a nice 4% lager. I sat down with it and I focused and it went down a treat. So situation normal. Thank you for the help of the community. I think it does say a lot about blokes. I've tried to talk about mental health in this podcast and very little response in the emails, but I spoke about lager and fuck me. It makes me think that I should do a different podcast, which is just about lager impotence.
But do you not think, because man, I like just a normal fizzy yellow lager. Like, you know, one of the ones that everybody sneers at, like a Foster's, a Tennent's. Something like that.
We're going to get letters about Foster's, by the way. But I agree, outside, if you're sitting outside and it's really cold, Foster's is good.
Yeah, it's great. And it just tasted nothing. You know what I mean? It tasted lager. It tasted like basic lager. But now everybody's crafting their lagers. Mm. So they're all like, you know, these small batch wanky lagers. They're all too strong. And they all taste, they're like, oh, this one's so hoppy. It's like, I don't want to taste hops. What, you mental? It tastes like, honestly, the new ones, the pale ales and all this, the IPAs. They taste like Domestos. It tastes like Domestos mixed with flowers. And it's like, I don't want, that's too much flavor. It's like eating a stock cube. I don't want all this flavor.
It's funny though, that was what a lot of people were saying to me. They were trying to lure me over to the dark side about craft beers and ales and stuff. I was like, no, yeah. I'm a mainstream person with mainstream taste, and lager is fairly central to how I define myself, is that I'm not sophisticated. I like the same shit everybody else does. I like football. I like curry. I like big science fiction films with fucking aliens fighting each other. Yeah. So I want to carry on drinking fucking Moretti.
Yeah, yeah, Moretti. One of those ones that like looks like it comes from a village in Sicily.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it's manufactured in a massive factory in Newcastle.
A lot of them are. I mean, the best one for that is Madry. You know that one. So it was Carlin. But Madry, they just basically went, oh, everyone's drinking Peroni and stuff. So they just literally said, let's give it something that sounds European. But it's brewed in fucking Derby, I think.
Right, yeah. So they just stick it in a different bottle. And all of a sudden, it's a European lager.
And also, the adverts for those, like Moretti adverts, made me laugh, because there's like all these like sort of Mediterraneans, just like a big family together, and the women are having a sensible beer. And I was thinking, like, that is not your fucking client base, man. Do you know what I mean? Literally, I suppose people whacking each other over the heads with chairs isn't going to shift units. David Domain, our super patron who keeps an eye on previous episodes. So we were talking about Lineker's poor sense of fashion, the fact he turned up in that shitty t-shirt, and also that he's sort of like quite old now. When you look at some of the hench guys he's opposite, I think part of the reason that he was, because he bald shamed Frank Lampard, which I understand that they're mates and stuff, but come on, Gary, you're better than, is he? But also he's got, you know, Micah sitting there with his rippling muscles. So I said, Lineker's actually quite old now. He's an old, straight, white guy, right?
He's older. He's older than Des Lynam was when Des Lynam was fired for being too old.
This is exactly the point we made. So Des Lynam was 45 when he started Match of the Day, 57 when he ended his stint. Gary Lineker is now 63. So
Gary Lineker, he's like a classic example of what's wrong with like modern morality, because everybody's like, oh my God, Gary Lineker is such a good guy because he tweets. The thing is, Gary Lineker, his tweets were used as a defense in court when HMRC took him to court for £4.9 million of unpaid tax. He said, well, look, you can't treat me as an employee of the BBC because, look, I do all this political activism. All his wanky, annoying tweets actually got him off a huge tax bill.
I think, if we were being charitable to Lineker, and I have no real instinct, but I do have an instinct for balance, you might say that it's both things. Like, he does sort of think that stuff, but he's also not averse to the idea that, fucking hell, my opinions, which actually aren't that, you know, beyond the pale, could also save me £4.9 million. I don't think he's the only one that does that. You know, there's been other TV people that have used ways of saying, oh, I'm actually an entity rather than a person.
Didn't Lorraine do the same kind of thing? But for some reason, she's allowed to.
Everybody loves Lorraine.
Yeah, everybody loves Lorraine. I could never bring myself to hate Lorraine. Like, Lorraine could literally take over the UK as a sort of Mussolini-type dictator, and I'd still be like, yeah, she's... You know what? She's all right.
And she'd have that guy to advise her on fashion, so we'd all be looking fantastic. Okay, quick thank you and a fuck you. The thank you is to the film Inside Out. Now, I went to see that on Sunday, and it's a really, you know, the first film I thought was amazing. It talked about how kids' psyches are formed and personalities and that. And the sequel is also really good. And, like, it was the most middle-class father thing I've ever done, Leo. Straight afterwards, I thought, you know, there's a lot of interesting issues in that. I think as a family, we should go for lunch and discuss them all. And my son, like, so I said, son, what do you think about, you know, the idea of your sense of self, stream of conscience, all this kind of thing? He totally nonplussed, couldn't give a shit, just wanted to do his colouring in.
Oh, man, that's such a relief. When you say he wanted to do his colouring in, he's not 22, is he?
He's 22. He had his little helmet on. He just sort of viewed it as a story about people getting lost.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you when you're eight? And I'm like, oh, I want you to learn. And I do wonder if our generation of parents are so fixated on kind of like, you know, because we're aware of PTSD and the effects of trauma and stuff, that every day we're conscious of what does this mean? How do they interpret it? And he was just like, yeah, pretty cool film about some people getting lost and then fight. It's funny. It's a funny film. Like, funny boy?
Yeah.
Funny?
Yeah. I think, yeah. Maybe we're reaching peak wetness. Maybe our generation is the peak wet and like the next generation coming through. Because like in Germany and across Europe, the more right-wing parties, I don't want to use, people in the media say far right or hard right. I don't want to say that because they're more just like sensible. But they're getting most of their support or a huge chunk of their support from the younger generation.
And the French, so I think, yeah.
You know, young people are rejecting this whole sort of wet, the whole Gary Lineker approach to things. But yeah, that inside out thing, like whenever they put, thing is, like I'd trust it if it was an organization that I trust. I mean, we've got Disney here and we watch Disney. There's some great stuff. You know, anything pre-1941 is great. But the stuff now is, they're just trying to crowbar as much. It's like this subliminal, not even subliminal. It's just open, like, pride flag propaganda.
Which is interesting you say that, actually, Leo, because that is one of the subjects we'll also be talking about, doing a bit of men's mental health, talking about basically becoming a father and how men experience pregnancy. And then in the patron-only section, we're going to be talking about, there's this Star Wars show out called The Acolyte on Disney Plus, and probably it's got one of the worst reactions from anything Disney have produced. A lot of accusations that it's gone overboard on the DEI. We'll be talking about those things, but also the fact it's a really shit story. Fuck you, Leo. What's your fuck you?
My fuck you. Well, I mean, I know I've touched on pride stuff, but yeah, just I think the whole pride movement has just got way. It's just drifted away from what it originally was. Like back in the 70s, the 80s, or whatever, there was genuine homophobia, discrimination faced by gay people. So we needed some sort of movement to say, like, look, these people are accepted in society. Stop being a dick. Stop being mean. But now that's, you know, that battle to a certain extent has been won. You know, we've got equal rights in society. It's accepted in society.
Well, it has in this country. Yeah, I think, like, if you look at the percentage of people that would not have an issue, like, it spiked from about the late 90s onwards. The acceptance level spiked a hell of a lot.
Yeah, and now I think the acceptance level, because of pride, because of the pride movement, is actually, the acceptance is going back because of gender ideology and stuff. Because as the pride flags expanded, it used to just be lesbian, gay, and bisexual, and that's cool. That's, you know, that's what it should be. And then it's become incorporated gender as well, which is way different from sexuality. You know what I mean? Gender is, you know, whatever your personal identity, you know, that kind of thing, whereas sexuality is like what you are and what you do. And it's also incorporated a lot of basically straight fetishes. So and sexuality is like asexual. So asexual is like people who don't have any sex. So there's been no point in human history when they've been discriminated against.
What does that mean? Does that mean married couples, Leo?
Yeah.
I have to do the gag, sorry, if you're going to lob up a half volley like that. I mean, there is. It's interesting what you say, because like I've got like gay friends of a certain vintage and younger ones as well who echo exactly what you're saying. And the thing about the queue, which is the queer, which does seem to be like, what is the price of entry to be in queue? It seems like just wanting to be identified as such. I think you do have to have done something. Like you've got to have something about
your dick. You've got to suck a dick. People fought for these victim points. You can't just swoop in.
Yeah.
It's stolen valor. It's stolen valor. It's like somebody saying,
valor.
I served in the Falklands. It's like, you've got to suck a dick or lick a fanny, whichever one it is.
God, yeah, or do something that is genuinely sexually oddball, I would say, at the very fucking least. Wear a mask, you know what I mean? All right, let's go from wearing a mask to talking about the Tories basically wearing a blindfold into the next election. So we got a week left of the election campaign. And I think really, if you look at the consistent polls, we should probably be focusing on the imminent one-party state, right? And the most challenging question that Keir Starmer has had in last week is about why a grown man would be watching Taylor Swift, right? Now, I'm not saying, I understand why. It's because the Tories just keep on fucking machine gunning their own legs off. And we've had Gamblegate, which we've already referred to. You know, some people are saying about Gamblegate or Fluttergate or whatever you want to call it, is that I think potentially, I think to me it's worse than Partygate, right? In a political sense, because Partygate was represented as all these Tory MPs partying. And actually, the only two fines were for Boris and Rishi. The Rishi one was fucking ridiculous. You know, Boris almost certainly lied about what he knew. But actually, most of it was civil servants who were government appointees. But the impression that the public got, if you'd asked them, they probably thought that all of the Tory MPs were in some basement doing fucking ketamine, having a great time, right?
Yeah.
Which, this is the epitome of corruption, essentially. This is like venality, selfishness, all the worst stuff. And as we've already said, done on such a piss poor scale, you just think you're not even good at being bad, to quote Bugsy Malone.
Yeah,
right?
the thing that really gets on people's tits, I think, is the lack of ambition. It's literally Rishi Sunak's closest aide. You know when he's announced the election, and you put £100 on. It's like, have some more confidence in Rishi Sunak. If you've got that little confidence that he's actually calling the election on that day, like, man, what confidence do you have in the other things he's doing?
I mean, what you should really have is it should be a bit like Top Boy. You should have had a little team of shotters, right? Little 14-year-olds on BMXs, you know. You should have had them all going round. You'd have organised a whole team to put on micro bets all around the country. And then you go, wow, maybe these guys should run the country. Because look at this, is organisation that we haven't seen.
Yeah.
You're right. It speaks to the things that the people have most gripe with the Conservative about, is how have you run stuff? Have you run stuff well enough over the 14 years, last 14 years? That's not as the same as saying. I mean, the great thing about Labour is like you know, they're not going to get questioned about anything now, even though the IFS have recently slammed the tax plans of all the main parties, right? None of the sums add up.
Yeah.
But it's most relevant when it comes to Labour, because they're definitely going to be in power. But Labour just keep going growth. I think the growth thing, it's a bit like Tinkerbell, isn't it? Is they just keep going. If we all shut our eyes, boys and girls, and we believe hard enough, then growth will exist.
Yeah, well, and also Labour's policies are actually quite explicitly anti-growth. So they're still a big state, high-tax party, and they're going to have to put tax up again. I mean, anybody who gets in is pretty much going to have to put tax up, because our whole financial system is teetering, because we've sort of run out of options. We've had quantitative easing. We can't do that anymore without triggering, you know, mass inflation. So by 2035, our pension scheme, we've got this weird system where when people get to like 65 or whatever, the government just gives them loads of money. And that's really unsustainable, because now everybody's going to be 65. There's going to be about 30 people in the country who are under 65 who are going to be having to pay all the tax for these people. And that's why, you know, they've sort of insisted on having mass immigration, because, you know, we've got this top-heavy population at the moment. But yeah, whoever gets in is going to put up tax. But if you put up tax, I turn down work, because it's like, if I'm going to have to give half of it to the government in tax, what's the point in going and doing the work? So then nobody benefits. Like, I don't benefit from doing the work. The employer doesn't get the work done, and the government doesn't get the money. So it's the Laffer curve. Once you put tax up to a certain... Once you put it as your escort arrived...
Somebody just tried to, so they've allocated my room. Hang on, I just...
Oh, yeah, because, like, what time is it? Is it kicking out time at the Travelodge?
The checkout time is normally midday for Travelodge. This is fucking humiliating. This is staying in. But yeah, it's noon.
Yeah, I remember Travelodges. Right. Yeah, they're just
chant. Oh my God, one of the most embarrassing moments of the podcast. If anyone's ever thought that I'm just making this up, like, oh, he reckons he likes lager, drinks Travelodge, you just heard a bloke going, oh, sorry, mate, I thought this was my room as well. What most people think. Right, so Nigel Farage, okay, so Reform, we're doing okay, well in the polls. Farage declares that he's going to run, they start doing even better. D-Day happens, they start doing even better. And then the first real fork in the road for him comes when he does this interview where he talks about the situation in Ukraine. Now, what he talks about is provocation. Now, here's the two charges against him. I think that what he said is, I've heard it elsewhere. Like, it's not that extreme, right? But what he does say is two things, right? He says, he talks about provocation. He says, don't poke the Russian bear. I always think if you're saying something that Vladimir Putin himself might also say, then there might be a case to answer, right? That is literally, Vladimir Putin could have that on a fucking T-shirt. Do not poke the Russian bear. And he also got praised on Russian state telly. Now, what I'm wondering here is that whether or not it wasn't an extreme point of view. I just wonder, Leo, whether it was politically naive, right? Because Ukraine and patriotism are quite closely bound up. One of the successes Boris did have was going in very early, very strong, this is a European war, not a million miles away from us, right? So it's our patriotic duty. And I think maybe it's the first difficult, properly difficult moment for him in the election.
Yeah, well, I know there's a lot of people on the right. I think this is a big failing on the right. A lot of people on the right, especially the sort of dissident right, who, you know, I think there's quite an overlap there with reform voters who think, Ukraine is, it must somehow be part of this, you know, this move for global homogenization. It's part of, you know, the WEF sort of making everything just a banal economic platform. It's, you know, the pride flag, blah, blah, blah. Which is absolute nonsense. Like, Ukraine is much, much more traditional and white and conservative and Christian than the most ardent Western right winger could possibly masturbate over. It's amazing. I'm amazed that there's people on the right who don't support. I'm amazed that the Democrats and the Labour Party support Ukraine, and I'm amazed that there's people on the right who don't. And I'd have thought, you know, if there's a chance for your sort of, you know, if you believe in, you know, countries securing their borders and, you know, Christianity and, you know, European countries keeping some sort of sense of identity, then, like, look what Ukraine's doing. Isn't it like a glorious example to the rest of Europe? But instead they're like, no, I don't like Ukraine because left-wing people like Ukraine, so I'm just automatically being contrarian. It's weird. With Farage, I guess back in the day, you know, because he's always looking for some sort of lever, some sort of wedge you can get in with the European Union and, you know, with sort of more global organizations, which I guess NATO is one of them. So, yeah, I mean, it's something that, an argument that made more sense, you know, back in the day. And it's an argument that Boris in 2016, Boris said the exact same thing. He said, you know, the European Union is to blame for the Ukraine war. But yeah, I mean, right now, I think Farage has made some sort of nuanced takes on Ukraine, and it's been, a lot of it has been sort of willfully misrepresented in the media.
But that's the point, is he's now, and the interesting thing, you've got this sort of schism on the right where Farage is now called and saying Boris Johnson was the worst prime minister ever, who betrayed his country, betrayed Brexit, you know, betrayed, I don't know, the World Cup 1966 winning team, you know, just betrayed everything. And then you've got Farage also now, because the Daily Mail, having sort of like helped promote Farage, are going, oh, fuck, the Tories are going to get destroyed. So they're, you know, running stories in the way that biased all newspapers are biased, as they do. And he sort of said, well, this is clearly tabloid, you know, sensationalism. Yes, Nigel, it's exactly the same sort of sensationalism that you've benefited from over the years. I mean, like, and this is like, I've always thought he's been a really shrewd political operator, but I thought it was a real misstep because he's sort of, on the one hand, you get that thing with Farage. I do believe that this is what he thinks, by the way. I don't think he's just confecting a point of view. I think this is what he thinks. But he's like, oh, I shoot from the hip. I tell people how it is. But it's weird that he couldn't war game the reaction to this and how his opponents would seize on it. And I think, I wonder, is this the problem of being a one-man party? Because I do sort of feel a bit sorry for Richard Tice, because he sort of took the Brexit Party, got it off its knees, got reform up to about 13%. And then old Nigel's gone, oh, hello. You know, I could come in right at the end here and do a little cameo, finally become an MP. But there's no fucking committee. This is a business that's owned by him, or principally owned by him. So he just said, oh, yeah, that's what I think today. And this is the problem that reform, it's come late in the day, but this is the problem, is that they're all accountable for essentially something that he hasn't run by anybody else.
Yeah, although Tice, I've actually spoken to Tice about this. Tice is a staunch supporter of Ukraine, and even took vehicles across to Ukraine, and you know, got a lot of flack from people on the, you know, dissident right. I just did air quotes in case people can't see. So I think that should reassure anybody who's worried that, you know, a vote for reform is this sort of isolationist party that's going to desert Ukraine and isn't interested in being part of anything else in the West. Because I think what we've seen across Europe as well is right-wing parties, when they're in opposition, they are a lot more protectionist and isolationist than when they're in power. I mean, look at Meloni. She's almost, it's almost too much. It's like with Meloni, she's, I mean, on the one hand, she's shown that, you know, right-wing parties can be quite sensible when they're in power. But on the other hand, she's shown that they're a bit too sensible when they're in power, you know?
Oh, mate, they all get dragged into the centre. What is it? A campaign in poetry governed in prose, you know what I mean? Because, like, it's like the Argentinian guy. I bet you any money. Like, it's the problem with any radical political proposition is there is always that danger that you might fucking win. Yeah. I mean, like, can you imagine if the Tories won? Some of the stuff that they've promised economically and national... I mean, having to roll out national service, there's a part of me, I mean, like many Conservative voters, very disenchanted. But there's a part of me that wants to go, I'd love to see how you fucking do this, man. Do you know what I mean? Like, with teenagers today, I would just look, go for it. You know, take their energy drinks off them and get them to the barracks. I'd love to see it happen. So, you know, I think you're right. Like, it may not be the position of the party, but this is the point about politics, isn't it? D-Day, let's be honest, it was symbolic. It was a bad decision, right? It was, but it cuts through. Gordon Brown, with the woman talking about immigration, it cuts through. Ed Bacon eating a bacon. I called him fucking Ed Bacon. Bacon. Well, there you go. I mean, if you want anything that proves the point, there you go. All right. So if anyone is wondering, so yeah, Jeff's been talking about the election quite a lot over the last few weeks. Of course, the basic point of the podcast is to look at all subjects from a sort of a normal person's point of view. And we do the odd bit on men's mental health. Do not switch off, because I know that a lot of people go, oh, for fuck's sake. There's a lot of men that are going, come on, Jeff, you know, my dad never discussed his mental health and he lived to the ripe old age of 52, right? I know there's a lot of people like that. But I just...
Yeah, they're right.
Well, they just don't want to go there. And last night in the record, one of the episodes we did was about fatherhood and talking about men's experience of pregnancy. And I know that straight away there'll be a lot of women going, oh, really? Men's experience of pregnancy? Oh, do tell me about that. But I thought you, when was your child born? It was a couple of years ago.
Almost 2 years ago.
2 years ago. And I sort of thought, like, all the female stuff gets documented, right? Mood swings, cravings, your foot swelling. I know about foot swelling, right? Because obviously having a kid, like carrying the kid, is so ridiculously more of a thing than being the bloke that got them pregnant, right?
Yeah.
I accept that completely. So I'm not for 1 second disputing that. But the male experience of pregnancy psychologically is so under discussed. I mean, we barely discuss becoming dads, right? So I just sort of like a slight gear change. I just wondered how you found it, like from the moment of... I mean, this is all quite personal stuff and you can reveal as much or as little as you want, but like, were you actively trying for a kid and stuff? Did it sort of come out of the blue?
We wanted to have a kid, but we hadn't actually sort of actively started just yet. So
you must have done something. So,
yeah. So it was unplanned, but definitely wanted, if you know what I mean.
Right, right.
And man, the thing that really, because I became a dad quite late in life. I'm like, you know, so I would have been like 46 at the time when she was born. And like, I was really shocked. The thing that really shocked me was, you know, all through my life, I'd had this message from the media, oh, don't have kids. It's like, you know, be single, be cool. Be like one of those Sex and the City girls. You know what I mean? Like, just
you'd definitely be Samantha, by the way.
Yeah, just of margaritas with the girls, like half price margaritas, and you know, be single, be, you know, be promiscuous, do all the Western things, you know,
individualistic stuff. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. If you have kids, it's like it's a huge expense, and it's they're screaming all the time, and you know, all the articles in the Guardian. It's almost as if there's a concerted effort to get people in the West to not have kids. And then I was really shocked how absolutely incredible it is and how much fun it is. And I mean, I'm glad I waited till now, because, you know, my wife is, you know, the perfect, you know, it's just perfect that having a family and stuff. But like, I was really shocked how amazing and fun, just fun, man. It's so much fun having a, like, babies are hilarious. They're hilarious.
Yeah, well, there is definitely a certain age, and obviously as comedians we've got that kind of like egotistical thing, like the first time you realize you can make them smile, you're like, right, I'm in.
Yeah,
it's like get warmed up on the subs bench, you've been there basically. Yeah. You're like the water carrier. You know, like in cricket, the 12th man, you're sort of bringing on like extra clean pads and quite often that. And then you suddenly go, I'm in the fucking game here. And then for blokes, that kind of it just increases over time. I mean, like, do you remember like the actual test? I mean, like, one of the things I was saying in the show was like, the way that you find out is so fucking like weird. Piss on a stick, thing goes a colour.
Yeah.
You know, and it's such a big thing. Do you remember like your emotions in that moment? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, did you feel that you had, because one of the things I was sort of exploring was whether or not as a bloke, like the woman can act however she wants. She can sort of freak out. She can go cry, you know, like you, she can be essentially in most cases what she wants to be. I felt like there was an incumbency on me to react in a good way that supported her. Did you feel that too?
Yeah, a bit. Like, I mean, I remember when it happened, I was coming back from a gig. You know, Simon Evans has got that gig in Brighton.
Oh, yeah.
In some sort of private members club or something. So I just got on the train back and my wife phoned me and said, I'm pregnant. And it was unexpected. You know what I mean? Right. She was on birth control and stuff, but I guess my jizz can get around that. It's like the Spetsnaz of jizz. Can just like the SAS raiding an Iranian embassy. But yeah, I was like, man, I was terrified because I didn't, you know, that was the first time I had proper responsibility in my life, you know what I mean? And I was terrified. And then when the baby's born, like the first bit, that's another thing. Like you see people posting on Facebook and stuff like, oh, my baby's born, I'm so in love, blah, blah, blah. And it's like my initial reaction when the baby was born, I was terrified because they're so tiny and like obviously fragile and stuff. I was like, man, so you're just constantly worried. It's like when you get a new car and you're worried you're going to scratch it, you know what I mean? You're just constantly worried that I'm going to, you know, knock a bottle of beer onto it or whatever, like reverse too far in the Tesco's car park. And, you know, but then once the babies are sort of, once you sort of realize they're doing all right, then it just turns into the greatest experience ever.
Yeah, once they have a sense of durability about them, I do think that toddler, the crawling phase, when you just see them fall off something and just twat themselves and then they just go, oh, okay, oopsie, you know, like, you're like, all right, fucking these things are really like elastic as well. Like, and there's that thing with babies with their kind of cartilage in their joints that they can literally just bend it. Like, they're so well designed for if you just accidentally sit on them in the couch, which is, by the way, not something I've done. It sounds like a kind of confession. I mean, like the anxiety that you spoke about, I think that's one thing that blokes could talk about more, because in the first trimester, like that, apparently for a lot of blokes, it's the first scan because you're like, oh shit, this is, because she says I'm pregnant. You're like, great. All right. See you later, babe. Great news. Happy times.
Yeah. Because she looks the same. She looks exactly the same.
They're being nice and stuff. Yeah. Like there's a slightly weird thing going on.
They don't want you to leave.
It's very, very positive. And then, but then you see the scan. And apparently for a lot of blokes, that sort of starts the chain reaction of fears. And my one was just like, just catastrophizing about my ability to provide, like I would, whatever happened. Like, so at the time I was more of, I was doing TV writing, but I was still club/touring. But anytime like if a promoter didn't call me back, I was like, that's the end. That's the end. I will be a joke figure to my child. My son will one day find out that I just basically, and I kept thinking I would just go bald, like out of the stress as well. So, and I'm saying this, I'm not saying all blokes would have that fear, but I do think that those fears, and I know women have like more like serious fears about carrying it and the responsibility they feel for that. But immediately I was like, well, I best earn some fucking money.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, I'm lucky because my wife earns more money than me. So I'm more like, you know, where can I place myself in the house that's you know, going to be least impede the process of her both earning the money and raising the child. So, I'm more like a sort of a balding teenager that's just in the way. But yeah, you do have this, like, it's a moment where you sort of, because I think a lot of people think, well, if I have a baby, I won't have time to pursue my dreams and all that sort of stuff, especially if you're a comedian, you know, you won't have time. But actually what happens, I spoke to Nico Yearwood, who's got three kids himself. Has he got three or two?
It's a classic bloke thing there, one of your close mates, and you're like, three or two. And definitely I don't know the third one's name.
And he said what he found was, and I totally agree with this, is like once the kids are there, it's like you say, you've got this sudden like fear of destitution, and it really makes you focus and like do better at your work.
So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. I knew I'd do it today. I teased out the softer side of Leo Kirst. There you go. You can't take any of it back now, mate. Everyone knows you're a big, big softie. Leo, always a pleasure to have you on, man. And listen, what should we direct people to? Obviously, there's your social media and you're across GB News.
I got my YouTube channel, so yeah, go on my YouTube, and I've got a Patreon as well. So if you want to see, I do sort of video essays. I think they've been described as that. Sounds boring, but yeah, I basically rant about stuff to camera.
Okay, so if you want to know the things that Leo doesn't feel free to say on YouTube, like, you know, you go, fuck, he's been pretty uncompromising on this show, then go to Leo's Patreon if you want to get the absolute raw stuff. And listen, man, I know you're doing a show on GB News on Saturdays. Is that going alongside headliners?
Yeah. So I do a show on GB News on Saturday at 8 p.m., the Saturday Night Showdown. So it's just, man, it's like I get all the just dumbest stuff of the week and I put it in a show and make fun of it.
Well, I would love to see pre-Watershed Leo Kurtz. Mate, thanks so much for coming on the show. And as we come into the final stage of this election campaign, I will have another a breaking news show this Friday. And then, you know, that's it. The following weekend, brace yourselves. It's going to be Labour. I'm not going to say start saving because I don't want to be a Tory shield. But, well, let's see how it goes.